Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host, and I'm the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd suffer the effects of aspergillosis if you inflamed me with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to give you the highlights.
Hey, Tony. Here's what's up. Bring fun to evaluation and impact data. Kayla Myers reveals the fun in what may sound dull through braids, data galleries, and data escape rooms. She distinguishes between outputs, outcomes, and impact, and explains the disconnect between traditional evaluation and the impact measurement we need in today's environment. She helps you recognize common evaluation challenges and sets you up to overcome them. Kayla is the founder of Bridgepoint Evaluation. On Tony's Take Two.
They need your opinion.
Here is Bring Fun to Evaluation and Impact Data.
It's my pleasure to welcome Kayla Myers to Nonprofit Radio. Kayla is the founder of Bridgepoint Evaluation. Through training, coaching, and hands-on evaluation support, she guides organizations in designing practical, action-oriented evaluations. She's an adjunct professor teaching program evaluation and survey design. The company is at bridgepointevaluation.com, and you'll find Kayla on LinkedIn. Welcome to Nonprofit Radio, Kayla.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to be here.
It is fun. Thank you. I'm glad you're having fun already, and we haven't even started. That's outstanding. All right. Thank you for bringing that. Thank you for bringing that energy. Okay. Evaluation, like impact measurement. These things get, like, nonprofits, I fear get intimidated. Plus they sound boring, although essential. Help allay, like, fears of intimidation and boredom.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think sometimes when folks think about evaluation, they think about auditing, they think about compliance, they think about proving their impact in a way that's going to be deemed enough. Whereas when we talk about evaluation over at Bridgepoint Evaluation, we focus on improving and learning and growing, and then also having a strong basis for making decisions confidently, for having a shared understanding amongst your entire organization. And so really just trying to flip the script a little bit on why we do evaluation, acknowledging that demonstrating our impact is only one piece of why we go about evaluation and learning versus thinking about evaluation as an auditing and compliance mechanism.
Okay. And for decision making, as you mentioned, so, you know, can we humanize this process?
Yeah, absolutely.
We can. That's doable. That's achievable.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes when we think about evaluation, we think about numbers. We think about how many people accomplished what, and how do I make sure those numbers are as big as possible? I see all the times nonprofits saying, we're going to reach 1,000 people, 1 million people. And what gets lost is that human moment, exactly. And so I think grounding ourselves and getting back there is so important.
Okay. And we're going to talk about, you know, going from 1,000 to 1,000,000, you know, that's not going to happen in 6 months or even in a year, but you want to celebrate the steps reaching. We'll get to the incremental nature that you should ought to celebrate. I feel like we should distinguish near the beginning here between outcomes and impact. Can you, you know, make that clear for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you can think about this. The easiest framework to think about this, in my opinion, is to think about the logic model, which I know I just said logic model and many people just like turned off their ears. We're like, never mind.
No, we're giving you a chance. No, not yet. That hasn't happened yet. Maybe at the 5 minute mark, but not the 3:40 mark. No, we're okay. You're okay. All right. No.
So just think about it instead of like an outcomes chain. So we host this training to what? to achieve what outcome. So you can think about outputs, which is how many people attended the training, but then what happened to those people in the training? What did those people do immediately after the training? Those are your short-term outcomes. Then you start building out that train, right? So people learned how to be financially healthy. They learned how to budget. And now the next outcomes on that train are things like they tried budgeting out. Once they tried budgeting out, they were able to better align their income with their expenditures. Once they got that, kind of just working through that chain and really thinking about that overarching chain, what it results in. So we're talking about a financial health program. What it results in is the impact. The result there being that folks have the financial stability and the financial wellness to be able to have increased decision making, increased resiliency, and increased ability for social movement, for financial movement within their lives. That's an impact. All the things that come before that are outcomes.
Okay, thank you. And outputs too. You added outputs too. Thank you. All right, cool. So you believe there's a disconnect between traditional evaluation and the impact measurement that you want to be talking about, that you're encouraging folks to do, you encourage clients to do. So help us see how the old model is not so good. I don't know. Not the old model is not new. The old model is not current. That's why it's old. Share the differences here, where we are versus where we used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is truly why Bridgepoint Evaluation exists. I have been an evaluation consultant for almost 15 years now, and much of my early career was spent on these really big 3-year, 5-year projects, huge budgets coming in from the federal government or research institutions. And then at the same time, I'd be working with nonprofits, medium-sized, large-sized, but even some smaller-sized nonprofits who are being held to very similar standards as those, large, huge consulting opportunities. And so what I would bring together is the two bridge across those words, right? Across those worlds. So that's
Oh,
bridge
look how
point.
fancy your Bridgepoint, you're bridging.
Yeah,
Oh,
bridging those
genius.
worlds.
Oh, actually, brilliant Bridgepoint. Okay.
Right. And so you're often seeing these large studies of demonstrating impact, proving impact. And instead, I want to work with organizations to reduce uncertainty and make better decisions with their data. So it's about improving your impact, not necessarily proving it, but improving it. And just generally kind of trying to take some of the tools from that impact measurement world and translate them into your in-house nonprofit of staff who wear 3 to 5 hats, of perhaps folks doing impact measurement who maybe didn't have necessarily formal training on that, but they grew into that role and they're fantastic at that role. So how do we better support them even more?
Let's talk more about the decision making that you mentioned earlier. Maybe I don't know. Maybe you have a story about how a nonprofit used data in decision making. But I won't put you on the spot. If you don't, that's okay. But help us see the value in clearer decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it can come from a few different reasons, but I do have one example in particular
Oh,
where I was
cool.
working with a client. Like many organizations, they had all in-person programming. COVID happened. They had all virtual programming, and now they're moving forward and they want to know the best direction. What is the, what? How can they bring together all of those resources they just put into virtual programming? A high demand for their services, and their love for in-person programming. And so what we did was we used program evaluation to answer that exact question. What is working well about virtual programming? What's maybe not so working
What was
so well?
their
What's not
work? What
working?
kind of programming were they doing?
Yeah, they do financial coaching as well as sorry, financial coaching and education, financial education and
Okay.
coaching.
Okay.
And so they have kind of this whole course that they typically do in person, then they shifted it all virtual. Now they're kind of in a blended approach, and they're saying, well, if we continue virtual, we could rapidly expand geographically. And that's not just a self-serving thing, but folks all through the world could use financial education and coaching, especially when we're talking about closing the home ownership gap for people of color compared to white people. And so they brought me in, they brought in our team, and they said, how do we go about this? How do we kind of design an evaluation for this purpose? So we brought everything together. We looked at the quantitative, we looked at the organizational data, we looked at operational data, and then we also looked at things like test scores, surveys, things of that nature, attendance scores, and also brought in the qualitative. So trying to kind of get the how, what, output side of things with the why and so what qualitative side of things, bringing all this together to highlight where might virtual programming maybe have some shortfalls, and how can you kind of close those gaps based on what your stakeholders are telling you? And where is there incredible opportunity for virtual programming? How can that be coupled perhaps with satellite offices or something of that nature, to be able to expand your reach and really change the way that you're able to do your work?
It sounds like a lot of that work was surveying.
It was honestly, what we really leaned into was operational data, existing operational data, which this is going to be something you hear
Oh.
me repeat. Let's use what you have. You probably have some great stuff. And then focus groups and collaborative evaluation layered on top of it. So I worked with their entire staff to have consistent learning workshops. I think, again, trying to get to that cultural change of evaluation isn't an audit, it's not a test, it is a learning opportunity, it's a cultural change, and kind of coming together to look at the numbers and then match them with interviews and focus groups to add more context and depth.
Focus groups. So you facilitate focus groups? Is that facilitate, moderate? I don't know what it's called. What is it?
Facilitate, yeah,
Facilitate. You
facilitate.
facilitate focus groups. Yeah. Okay. How do you get people at ease? This is something I always wondered in a focus group. Now, so that was a program around financial literacy. How do you get people to open up about, maybe where they s started before the before working with the with this nonprofit, that they were, I mean, they were essentially saying I was financially illiterate because I'm in a financial literacy program. Like, how do you get people to open up, not just about that, but about, not talking about money? Like, people would rather talk about death or go to the dentist, I think, than talk about money. How do you get people to open up in that kind of in a group setting?
Oh yeah, you are like nail on head there, because it is so hard to even recruit people to come to that setting, let
Yeah,
alone
right. How do you
open up
even
a
get
business.
them in the door? $50 gift cards, or I don't know what, but
Yes, exactly.
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely compensating people for their time and expertise, sharing food, breaking bread. I mean, trying to understand like what are things that generally are going to provide comfort. And then I think really flipping the script a little bit, right? So talking to folks about, we are navigating a broken system, an intentionally broken system. There's a system in place that seeks to hold this information back from you, that it tries to hold communities down, especially when it comes to financial wealth and power. And you are here as experts within your community, right? You are here as people with lived expertise, community expertise, network expertise, and that's what we're going to talk about. So what we're actually going to talk about in this focus group is how you, as experts in the room, see this program lifting up those around you. What are the ways in which you see it lifting people up, and which you see it perhaps letting people fall through the cracks, which is something the organization really wants to reconcile with. How do we build some safety nets in there?
Yeah.
And how can all of that work together to kind of overcome this systemic effort? So really, kind of de-individualizing every single component of it and saying, we're not here to necessarily talk about you, but you as an expert, right, in all of these different areas, and how you can help us really have a reciprocal exchange of information about this.
That's excellent. So it's an appeal to community that you can help us help the community. If you share, if you're honest, and plus you mentioned that I think most people do want to help the community, especially when they were helped by the program. Like, they want others. Like, it's almost empowering. I can help this group help others if I help them. Plus you mentioned meals. I'm writing a book. It's on planned giving fundraising, but I have something I love. shared meals. I mean, I do, so I do PlanGiving fundraising consulting. So I do a lot of individual like donor and prospect meetings. I love over a meal. You said breaking bread, you know, sharing a meal. I even created an acronym like MEAL, Meals Expertly Allow Learning.
Oh, I love that.
And I just,
I
you know,
love
it's just
that.
something like cute for the book, but it does, you know, the shared space, the share, you like you're at a communal table with the focus group, right? Before, I assume it was before or maybe even during their eating, people are literally sharing that physical space of the table and they're sharing the food.
Yeah.
That
And it's
that's a
right. And it
metaphor
grounds.
for what you want them to do. You
Yes.
want them to share.
It is. It's perfect. So there's all of those layers, right? And then there's just this really basic layer, Tony, which I'm sure you've seen, where it lets people kind of crack their voice a little bit, right? So they get in the room and you're nervous and you're like, kind of, why am I here? But we're not going to talk about that first. We're going to talk about like, aren't these ribs amazing? Isn't this
Yeah.
burrito bowl incredible? And just
Right.
start talking and just warm up our voices, warm up our relationship with one another. Much more smooth sailing than just getting in the room and saying, here's the consent language, let's go.
Yeah, right. Were they beef ribs or pork ribs?
Pork.
Okay. I live in North Carolina. It's got to be pork ribs. I'm not,
Okay.
I think Texas, I think is the beef. Well, Midwest generally more beef ribs, but yeah, pork ribs. Did you have pulled pork too, or just the ribs?
We did all sorts of good meals. We did
Okay.
see some pulled pork, the corn, and that was the thing too. We told folks the menu in advance, and then we had all these women making cornbread, and so then we're talking about cornbread recipes. I mean, it's just
That's
so
great.
it, and I'll know here, the focus group's long. If you haven't caught on, the focus group's not a short endeavor.
Yeah,
Because
yeah.
we got to show up, we got to make our plates, we got to talk, we got to share this cornbread recipe, and then we're going to get into
I love that. I love people came with the homemade cornbread. That's the, and then they're sharing the
it.
recipes. Oh no, I use canned corn. No, you got to use fresh. No, canned corn is better. No, okay. No, I love that. All right, sorry. All right, how do we overcome the these challenges? I mean, how do we like sort of get nuts and bolts, you know, start to like what should we be thinking about? Or, you know, if we even if we don't have a suppose we're not even a grant recipient, but we do want better data. We want to, like you're saying, we have the data, but we need to coalesce our data so that it can help us. Maybe it's not even for a third party. Maybe it is just for our own purposes. What do we need to like think about? I don't know, culturally, leadership wise. You know, I like steps, if we can. And you know, I'm not that you have to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but you know, I like steps that people step takeaways. I like takeaways that people can take action on or at least start thinking about.
Absolutely. And I think about it as a framework, right? Because we try it out. It's just a general idea. And I do a lot of this. So, like I said, I do a lot of coaching, which is more about one-on-one coaching, as well as fractional management. So, if you just need someone to come in and kind of help your team, navigate this real sea change in evaluation culture, we can come in and kind of manage that for you, leave you kind of with that learning system in place. And so, what that tends to look like is we start off with an inventory of what you have, what's already going well, what do you already answer in terms of what data points you have, where you have interest, where you have staff interest, and really bringing people together in that identification. Because on one hand, yes, your team's filling out those spreadsheets. On the other hand, what you might not have a finger on the pulse of is that your country manager is always having lunch with their main volunteer and is kind of always doing a bit of a pulse check in terms of how things are going with them. That's data. Formalizing that is the challenge. So we start off with just this inventory. What do you already have in your pocket? Then we start to think about what are the strategic questions that are going to guide learning. So they might ask, to what extent are we achieving our outcomes, with whom, for whom, under what circumstances? And they're going to examine the process by which you do that, the appropriateness of that process, the relevance of that process. So we're just going to put together those questions. We're going to then put everything on a grid, right? So we're going to take those questions, we're going to put those across the top, we're going to take all of your data sources, all of the work that you're doing, put that in rows, and identify where you have overlap, where we're answering those questions with the data we're already collecting, and examine it through the lens of breadth and depth. So breadth is participation counts. It's the number of people you reach, the number of activities you
Our
achieve.
output, you were saying before, the outputs.
Exactly. Breadth is going to tell you how far your work is going. And then depth. So then we're going to look for depth. How are we going to hear about stories of what that actually looks like on the ground, as well as perhaps case studies of how this one person like really went all in on the four programs we offer and changed her life in 9 months, like really changed her whole way of operating. Those are our depth stories. That is usually where we need to turn things up a little bit. So we go through this table, we look at this, those are all depth measures, these are breadth measures, and here's where we need to kind of add in some new tools or maybe just add in questions on the tools we already have. Get all of that in place. We talk about a reasonable implementation timeline. Reasonable being key. If it's not reasonable, it will break and it will fall apart. But then the most important part that I think tends to get forgotten is when are we going to have our learning moments? When are we going to come back together? Is it going to be quarterly? Is it going to be monthly dashboards and then quarterly conversations? But really kind of reorienting ourselves again. How are we going to learn? When are we going to learn? In what ways are we going to learn? And that learning tends to look the same as that focus group I just talked about. We're going to get together. We're going to set aside enough time to have a meal, to talk, and to get out of our daily routine so that we can really come and think strategically about our work.
And what can we incrementally look for to celebrate little moments, whether it's a monthly dashboard or a monthly meet, a quarterly meeting, whatever it is, like what movement in this data formalizing process can we see incrementally?
And one of my fractional management clients was such a great exemplar of this because within the first 2 months, we got together, we identified their data systems, and we found key quick changes. One of those changes was we moved from one spreadsheet that wasn't linked to anything, it wasn't talking to anything else, right? They were having to work really hard on their data. We replaced it with a form that spoke directly to a dashboard. And so now their data is working for them. And within 3 months, we changed the way their team meetings were structured. So instead of each of their program managers coming together and trying to remember, in the last month, we held this training. I think there were 30 people there. It felt like a success. People weren't that engaged to doing these kind of like report outs, to instead opening up their team meeting and having their dashboard and having different program managers be like, whoa, you had 100 people come to that workshop? What on earth happened? And they were like, oh, right. I found this nurse who works in churches and she told everyone about our workshop and all of them came. And just having like these really amazing learning moments that changed when we stopped making people work so hard on their data and started making our data work so hard for them.
It's time for Tony's Take Two.
Thank you, Kate. Someone needs your opinion. It's a former guest. She's been on a few times. Karen Graham, very smart data scientist, tech person in the nonprofit community, and she is leading a donor management software study. So she wants to get information about how you use your CRM, or even if you don't have a CRM, what you do in place of that, just everything around your donor management software. So I'm helping her to encourage you to participate in the study. N10 is also involved. They're also, I think Karen's leading it, but N10 is helping fund it. So, how closely we partner with N10, Amy Sample Ward, of course, being our tech contributor. She's the CEO of N10. And of course, I bring the podcast to N10's conference each year. This year, we'll be going to Detroit in March. So, helping Karen, helping N10. I would ask you to participate in the study. If you go to my LinkedIn this week, you will see, just check the posts, and I will have posted, I have posted it about it this week. And the link to participate in the study will be there. It'll be in my comment. So that's it. So I hope you can help out Karen, help out N10 by participating in their donor management software study. I thank you very much. And that is Tony's Take Two. Kate, like my voice just cracked. Thank you.
Hey. Pete.
Like I'm 14.
I was gonna say something and now I forgot because now I just wanted to make I want to make fun of you for your voice crack, but whatever I had, it was good.
I'm sure you were going to encourage listeners to participate in the study.
In the study, yes, please go participate in the study. Kate, we've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of Bring Fun to Evaluation and Impact Data with Kayla Myers.
You teach program evaluation, survey design. Where is that you teach?
Yeah, the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, Hubert, name got to be named for Hubert Humphrey, the
It
senator
sure
from
is.
Minnesota who ran for president in I don't know what election, presidential election. Hubert Humphrey, right? It's
Yeah,
got.
you got it.
So what is that like? What, do students need well, let me ask you. Jump all around. You got a lackluster host. I'm sorry. Do you have a background in, I don't know, mathematics or data design, data analysis, data design, computer science, or are you like
Yeah.
Spanish and music major? What?
So this is and this speaks to how I ended up in my career.
Oh,
I
cool.
am a generalist with a generalist training. So I got a degree, an interdisciplinary degree in development. So economic development, community development, etc., where I took a different every semester I was taking different classes in College of Health, College of Natural Resource Management, because I was like, well, I love all of this. I love the intersection of how all of these systems work together. And then got a mixed methods, had a mixed methods focus. So I was taking qualitative analysis classes alongside my statistics classes and policy analysis classes. And I am a graduate of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. So I got to come back almost a decade later to then teach the exact classes that were the inspiration for my career.
That's outstanding.
It's
You
wonderful.
teaching the classes that were the inspiration for your career. I
It's
love that.
wonderful.
And do you find a lot of interdisciplinary or like self-defined majors in your classes?
I think, the biggest degree program at the Humphrey School is the Master's of Public Policy, which is inherently, allows itself to really be customized quite nicely. But then we also do have students from, the business school, from the education school, all kind of converging into this one space. I really teach the class because it's at the public affairs school with a lens to policy and a lens to public affairs work. If you take an evaluation class at an education institution, they're really going to focus on evaluation and education, or the public health school, it's really going to focus on a public health evaluation. But mine is really looking a little bit more both broadly and focused on public-facing programs. So how the programs that are intended to really help the public, how do we evaluate those and really measure that, especially because most of the time the public is interfacing with much more than just one program. They're interfacing with all sorts of different nonprofits.
Do you teach at all in person, or is it all
Yeah.
virtual? You doing in
It's
person?
all in person, which is fantastic.
Oh,
I
that's
love it.
excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, what is that like? Are you looking at a sea of laptop screen? The back of laptop screens. Is that how students in college take notes?
I
Like when
the
you look up,
classes
you see a bunch of like Apple and Dell and Lenovo logos
yeah
and glowing eyeballs because their screens are lit up. Is that what you see, or what?
I'll give them credit, their laptops usually have some great funny stickers on them, so I do get that. The class is 3 hours long, and so we only do lecture for about 45 minutes, and then we switch it up. We do a lot of applied learning, a lot of group work, a lot of facilitated discussion. I'm trained in technology of participation and art of posting, and I bring a lot of that into the classroom because I don't just want them to learn the concepts of evaluation. I want them to learn how to facilitate an evaluation. And so I will use a lot of times facilitation methods that I just want them to learn by having them go through it. So we host World Cafe conversations where they then get to learn, like, this is a World Cafe conversation. This is why you use it. This is when you use it. Great. Now we're going to use it to talk about how to apply this learning.
You said you're trained in technology and participation. Is that what you said?
Technology of participation,
The
TOP.
technology of participation. What
Yeah.
you I think you just gave an example of it. What
Yeah.
does that mean generally, the technology of participation?
Yeah, and I think it was designed by a group. It's ICCA, International Culture. I'm going to forget their acronym. It's basically putting together neuroscience and facilitation. So how do we, overlay what neuroscience tells us about how people think and process information with how we help them navigate a conversation? One specific example that, and then your listeners can look this up and use it in their next conversation, is the ORID framework. So the ORID framework
ORID,
tells us,
ORID.
yes, thank you,
Okay.
ORID, observation, reflection, interpretation, decision making.
Okay.
So we're going to start off when we bring a group together. Perhaps we have a data dashboard, right? This is something I will often use whenever we're coming together over some data. We'll start off with just, what do you see? What stands out to you? Where do you have questions? What's surprising? What's not surprising? We don't have to ask all these questions, but these are all observational questions. Interpretation. What seems
Wait, what was the
critical?
R? Wait, the O was observation. What was the
Thank
R?
you, thank you.
Skip the R. Yeah,
Reflecting.
you went from O to I. Okay, OID. It's no good.
Reflection.
You can't redo the OID into OID.
Yeah.
Okay, reflection. What are we reflecting on?
Reflecting. What stands out to you? What feels critical? What feels desired? What feels undesired? Right. So just reflecting. Like, how are we feeling? So what do we see? How do we feel about it? Interpret. What does it mean for us? Why? What feels of most importance? What feels of most importance for external communications? What feels of most importance for decision making? Where do we need to dive deeper? So interpreting that information. So here's what I see. Here's how I'm feeling about it. Here's what I think I need to do about it. And then decision making. So what's most important for us to carry forward and next steps? What next steps are we seeing here? Who needs to be involved in the next conversation? So where do we go from here?
All right, cool. Thank you. Taking a little digression into technology and in. Wait, would you technology? I just lost the word.
Technology
Technology
of participation.
of participation. Participation of technology of participation. Thank you. Well, so what about, we can talk about some of the tools. I don't know. Are there tools that folks can use, or is everything, I don't know, proprietary to Bridgepoint, or like, are there tools that we can offer resources?
Yeah, absolutely. Truly, I'm in this work because I want folks to take on evaluation. So our
And I can
tagline,
tell, like, you're passionate about evaluation and program management measurement, and no, it's moving. Like, you're moving.
Oh, great.
Your
I'm so happy.
passion is convinced. I'm feeling it. What's the word I'm looking
Oh,
for?
great.
Yes, it's palpable.
Our tagline is, we turn data into stories and so can you. That's the first phrase you'll see when you open up our website, because that's what we believe. And so I often work with folks to think about a data braid. So when you bring everyone together, and sometimes when I like to bring a lot of tactical work into my conversations, and so if we show up together in person, we might pull together some yarn and start actually braiding together pieces. But think about your data braid that your organization is pulling together. The strands are going to be qualitative. They're going to be stories. They're going to be those mission moments that really bring your team together. That they say, I was just talking to this one participant, and gosh, I was re-energized. I'm ready to go. They're going to be your quantitative measures. Maybe you have some pre-post survey or some pre-post test scores. Maybe you have some confidence measures. Those different quantitative measures, as well as your operational data. So you're looking at number of people coming to your trainings, number of trainings worked. These are all different strands within your data braid. And what you first thing that you want to do is make sure that those strands are equal, right? So if you have a data braid and one strand is a string and another is a thick piece of yarn, how do we kind of change that up to make it a little bit more balanced, to make sure that we're properly pairing things like pre-post test scores with qualitative stories that help us understand why the change in test score is important? I often work in food systems. So working, whether that be with the regional food supplier aggregator, right? So thinking about those agricultural producers who bring together all these different products and provide them in a CSA or provide them to local schools. So I work on that side of things, as well as the food shelf, food distribution, food bank side. And a lot of times what we hear is the number of grocery bags sent home with students on a Friday, right? So the idea here being that all of us can assume is that now this family has a meal for Saturday, which is really vital when we're talking about students and making sure families are fed, because those 5 days a week is so important for families. What we don't hear is why that is so important. And so when we start talking to participants and we hear them say, "Well, actually, I matched it with some of the food I already had in my cupboard, and we went to my mom's house, and my kids were able to have time with their grandparents, interacting. I was able to check on my parents and see how they're doing, and groceries were taken care of. I wouldn't have been able to feed all of these people had it not been for some of the supplemental food." And that resonates with people. People get that. That is why people want to do this work.
Right. Now it's grandchildren with their grandparents,
Yeah.
and there can be a bountiful meal.
Yeah, right. And so that's the grade, right? Like we just put these pieces together to really tell a holistic story of what your organization is doing and how it's going about doing that. Because what we also heard in this is that she didn't necessarily have enough to feed all of, are they all her dependents, right? Is she a caretaker for her parents there? And so we can start digging into that too and saying like, I'm hearing this amazing thing, and maybe we can expand our definition of dependence in our next intake survey and hear from folks like, is it more than just the people in your household that you're providing meals with? That way we can adjust the amount of food that we're sending home with you.
All right, Kayla, what else can you share in the second part of your mission that and you can too?
Yeah,
So the braid is
absolutely.
excellent. The braid is excellent. I love the metaphor of the braid equal, you know, because if you have a ball and a strand, your braid is going to be, you know, well, fakakta. It's going to be messed up. It's not, it's going to be weak. It's not going to be symmetric. So
Yeah.
that's a terrific metaphor. What else for the and you can too part?
Yeah, I think, really thinking about how to bring your team together for collaborative learning. And so I kind of brought some of this up, but a lot of what we do is grounded in fun. So I actually took a lot of trainings in youth-based evaluation, and so we're learning about theater exercises and play-based exercises. And my main takeaway was like, grown-ups love having fun. Why aren't we trying this out? Um, and so and so some of the things that we do is we do data gallery walks where we bring everyone together and set it up almost as an art gallery of charts and quotes and different, tables, and just invite people to walk through it like a gallery, right? Where some folks are going to be silent observers, they're going to be reflecting. Other folks are going to be having quiet conversations to help say, like, what are you seeing here? I'm seeing this. What do you think? And then facilitating a large group conversation. So all to say, how are you learning? How are you collaboratively using the information to bring it to life, to tell the story of what's happening, and help you learn the story of where to go next?
The braid, the data gallery. You got one more? I love threes. Is there
Yeah.
one more that you can?
Yeah.
One more. Okay, great.
Here's another fun one, and I learned this from a colleague. A data escape room. This one is so fun if you just want to get people together to be silly. But take your data dashboard. So instead of that gallery where you put it all over the walls, put it on a dashboard. Break into teams. I recommend shaking people up, right? So if you have a programs team, like shake them up, mix
Yeah,
them all
get
up.
them mixed up. Right.
Yeah. And now you're going to start a timer and you're going to tell people, these are all clues that come together to tell a story, maybe three stories. You escape the data escape room when your team can cohesively tell a story. So you need to make sure there's no gaps. You need to make sure all these data points are kind of coming together to help you understand the story that's coming out here. And my students know this one because I do it in class, and we always have a blast with it. But it really helps people examine their information, examine their program data, examine their organizational data, and put it together with different quotes, with different case studies, with different test scores, things of that nature, and be able to then say, like, here's a comprehensive interpretation of what I'm seeing, and here's some things that are still a little bit of gaps for me. Like, here's some things that I want to learn more so I can really test and prove this. And so we come back together and have a large group discussion, and that's where a lot of the learning and revealing new insights comes out.
I love the data escape room.
It's so fun.
Yeah, that's something fun. All right. What about some challenges, like, you know, obstacles we're likely. Oh, you know what? Before we get to the obstacles, see, I told you, lackluster host. This sounds like we. This is a an endeavor that is going to require, you know, leadership buy-in, right? I mean, you've got to get, because this is going to take some time. Folks are going to come together, you know, even the quarterly meetings can be fun, it sounds like, but still, it's taking time away. We need leadership buy-in for this initiative, right?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
We do. And I think just keeping in mind, we're already spending that time. We're already doing these things, right? So when we are having staff all fill out their own unique spreadsheets, and then we're having maybe a grants manager or someone take all of these spreadsheets and input them, like all this manual data entry, all of this, you know, kind of rote work that's going in, it's time already spent. I'm saying, like, let's take that. Instead, make it into a system where you're not working so hard on your data, but your data is working much harder for you, and revealing what it can do for you. So, you know, think back to that team meeting too, right? Where we're starting off our team meeting, the first 20 minutes are folks trying to remember what on earth they did last week and think about things they can share with their colleagues. We're going to change that. We're going to instead make sure that our data is working harder. It's in a better spreadsheet. It's in a better dashboard. And we're going to have a much, our conversation's going to go much further.
I love systems. I mean, I think they're essential. Systems, processes. You know, that every we have this cadence, but each time is not the first time we've done whatever it is we're talking about. So let's have a process so that it just becomes easy. It becomes natural, becomes routine, instead of it being an event every time.
Right. And that's, you know, something that we love to bring together, right? Is like we are the fun folks. We're going to come in and have a data escape room, and we're going to be able to convert your spreadsheets into Microsoft forms that go through Power Automate and show up in this really nice Power BI dashboard. Like we are nerds who can dig into those different things and still share a great meal and have fun at the annual meeting.
Can we have a glass of wine with the meeting,
Oh,
or?
absolutely. We're always
Okay.
in.
Okay. And I love it. You're coming in like we're the fun. We're gonna have fun with data. Are right, people are like rolling their eyes. Yeah, I don't think so. But I'm sure within the first 10 minutes or so, you change minds. All right. So I was starting to ask you about, you know, obstacles we might see in our data, our measurement and data analysis flow, our process. What, you know, what are some common way things we might see, and how do we circumvent them?
Yeah, I think one of the first challenges I often encounter is
Journey, that
folks
was the word I was like, journey.
journey.
I
There you
tell
go.
you,
I love
lackluster host, I told you this
that.
journey that we're on together. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, all right, sorry.
Yep. No, you're good. So the journey, so I think one of the biggest obstacles on that journey is folks are going to struggle with how much do I leave behind and how much do I kind of retroactively fit. So for example, when we're talking about a new way to enter in your data, right? That is going to give us a bit of a bump in the road in terms of, well, do we want to program all of our past data into this new dashboard, or are we just starting on day one and moving forward? That's a really important conversation to have, to talk about the implications of either decision making. But we can think about the ways that we can utilize your community, your volunteers, to help us with that backlog if we need to do that. And that shows up in a lot of different ways, right? It's kind of like if we refine and change our systems right now, how does that impact us in terms of having this longitudinal story, this longitudinal measure? It might, but at the end of the day, if you have a longitudinal story that doesn't really represent your work, doesn't go that deep, can't tell you that much, how valuable is it, right? So let's talk about setting up the framework for a longitudinal work moving forward. The other challenge that's going to come up is that you're going to have funders who want different measures, and that is a pain point that a lot of organizations go through. So you know, any funder or any development team will tell you that getting in those diverse types of funding is really key. The challenge is that when you bring in all these different funders, they might have all their own reporting requirements. And so, how do you build out a system, an evaluation system, in which you can meet all of those requirements while still being proactive about your learning, your strategy, your decision making? That's where I think it can be really helpful to bring in a team, because that's a heavy load to lift at the front end. Once you have it figured out, you're good to go.
Okay, only two obstacles to our journey.
Those are the two that pretty much always come up.
Most common. Okay.
Those are the two that it's just they're just real challenges. They're just in the world, and I think, staff feelings and staff sentiments, kind of like you brought up when we started this, right? Like, getting people to come to an evaluation workshop is like getting them to show up to algebra. Like, no one wants to be there. I actually had a participant come up to me after a recent workshop, and she said, I want you to know that they made me come here kicking and screaming. I brought out the entire book. I'm too busy, I'm sick, I'm this. And leadership said, please go. And now I actually have tangible tools, right? Let's look, once we get out of this, can we do, a cross tab here? Can we do a T test there? People just gloss over, right? They're like, oh my gosh. Let's move that. Like, that doesn't need to be something you have to worry yourself with, is like, what is a T test? What is she talking about? But instead saying, here's the results. Here's what this actually says. What we know is that the more times people come to our workshop, the better their savings account grows. That's what the main takeaway is. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And kind of get yourself away from some of that jargon, some of that, just that middle school math feeling of like, oh my gosh, why is there a letter in this math equation? I don't understand what's going on. And I say that as someone who did really struggle with some of those math lessons. And so I understand where people are coming from.
That's a great place to wrap because it's uplifting. T test, you talk about T test. I took statistics for poets at Carnegie Mellon University.
Kidding.
So, that's that. I recognize the phrase T test. All right. Kayla, Professor Kayla Myers. Outstanding. Thank you. Founder of Bridgepoint Evaluation. The company is at bridgepointevaluation.com. And Kayla is on LinkedIn. Kayla, thank you so much. Really, you.
Thank you so much. This was fantastic.
I'm glad. I think that it's fun. You make data fun.
I
You're succeeding. Now, a lot of people are trying.
tried.
You've succeeded.
Next week, grow your personal brand and your nonprofit. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.